Hi, I'm Anna Harris, and this is the Defined by God podcast, a support resource for Christians looking for hope and healing from trauma and adversity. Join us as we interview experts, hear stories of healing from real people, and discuss and define common types of trauma, how it impacts us, and the latest and best strategies for healing and thriving. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, we are going to be talking about EMDR therapy and psychodrama and some other things. I'm very excited to introduce my guest to you. Her name is Dr. Esli Carvalho, and I hope I pronounced that right, but she can help us in a minute. Esli is the founder and director of the Trauma Clinic Group. She's the author of several books. Some have been bestsellers, and has over 40 years of clinical experience. So I'm so excited to get to hear from her today. Particularly, we're going to be talking about EMDR therapy and just finding out more about that and how it works, why she recommends it, and why is it Christian user friendly. So let me go ahead and bring on Esli. Hello, how are you doing?
Hi. Hi, nice to see you. Nice to be with everybody.
Thanks so much for coming on. I'm excited for what we're going to talk about today. And go ahead and just introduce yourself a little bit more of your background, your experience. I know you're a trainer in EMDR and all of that. So just go ahead and give us a little more information about yourself.
Okay. Well, I was born in Brazil. I'm a Brazilian parent and who immigrated to the United States when I was very little. So I did all of my schooling up until about the 10th grade in the United States. I was raised in Texas. I can still say Dallas and, and make it draw. And I returned to Brazil I was almost 16. So I finished high school and did my professional training as a psychologist here in Brazil. And later on, I moved around. I went to Ecuador. I married a widower there and who moved around all over Latin America. And so in one of my sojourns in the United States, because of him, my first training was in psychodrama, and I had become a psychodrama trainer. And I love it because it's so not only creative, but effective. But at one point, I had something that was bothering me. And so he said, well, you know, we have an EAP. You can probably do a couple of sessions, you know, for free with the company and stuff. So I signed up and I went there, told the lady my story. And she says, I think you have, you know, an indication to do EMDR. This is back in 1995. EMDR wasn't even 10 years old yet. And I said, what's that? And so she was explaining it to me. And I thought, you know, I've seen a lot of weird stuff with psychodrama and blah, 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 but wiggle your eyes and you get over trauma. This one, I got to see it to believe it, you know. But she said it was scientific. She gave me things to read. And so I went home and read it. And I came out of my first session of EMDR so impressed, so amazed by the results that I went home and I said, honey, let's pull out that plastic card because I don't care how much it's going to cost. I'm going to learn how to do this thing. And then, like they say, the rest is history. I was privileged and blessed enough to have been trained by Francine Shapiro herself, who was the person who developed this, who discovered the amazing way of making our brain heal itself. And then later on, as I moved around, I went back to Ecuador and then back to the States and then on back to Brazil. My husband was finally transferred to Brazil, where he retired, and he kind of looked at me like somebody who wanted to go back to the United States. And I said, no way, honey. Now it's my turn. We're staying here in Brazil. And so we implemented the EMDR movement here in Brazil. We've trained over 4,000 therapists. I eventually became a trainer of trainers with the EMDR Institute, which was founded by Francine Shapiro of Blessed Memory. And I've trained probably 9 or 10 trainers over the years and taken EMDR to many other countries in Latin America, Spanish-speaking America as well, and Brazil. So now I'm back into English, and I'm training in English as well and doing some other creative things. And I've always been interested in this integration of psychology and Christian faith because I'm a rare bird. I'm a sixth-generation born-again Christian Brazilian on my mother's side. So we were kind of raised as heretics because back then, you know, this is the largest Catholic nation in the world. And we weren't seeing that well. Nowadays, things have changed so much, you know, thank goodness. And
your husband was in missions, right?
Yeah. And I married a Canadian who was raised in China. His first language was Mandarin. He was a blondie who spoke Mandarin Chinese till he was 8. His parents met in China with the China Inland Mission. And he eventually went to Ecuador with his first wife as a missionary as well. She passed away there many years later, far too young. And he's buried in Ecuador, in fact. And he went answering the call after those 5 missionaries, Jim Elliott and the other 4 missionaries, were killed by the indigenous groups there. Mm-hmm. So I met him. He had recently been widowed and was working in a mission that wasn't all that open to having people get married to divorced people. And my first marriage had fallen apart after 5 years. He left me with a young child. She was 2. And you don't undo your past in some ways. There's some things you can get over and you can undo, but you know, divorce papers are something that you can't blot out. And so eventually he left that ministry and took up with another mission that accepted him and where my divorce was not an issue. And so we've been serving the Lord in that sense until he retired. I've been much more of a marketplace missionary for the most part. I just enjoy psychotherapy. I enjoy seeing clients. I enjoy teaching and training people to do these things and seeing people heal. And more recently, the Lord has really called me into that vision from Revelation 22:2, which says that the leaves of the tree of life are for the healing of the nations. And so I'm very committed to seeing more healing come to more people in more nations, wherever the Lord opens the door for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So could you, for people that just maybe they've heard maybe the term EMDR, but have no idea what it's about, what it looks like, could you just give us an idea of what it is and how it works?
Okay. Well, in a certain way, we could say that it imitates what we do when we sleep. You know, I think the Lord in his mercy, when we blew it in the Garden of Eden and he kind of kicked us out and we've never really recovered from that trauma of having, you know, been created as perfect beings and not being perfect anymore. I think in his mercy, he gave us this mechanism in our brain, which is what we call reprocessing. And it's what we do when we dream. And most everybody has studied probably in high school that we have the rapid eye movement sleep and we dream and we go through different moments and different phases of the cycle of sleep. Well, in this phase of the rapid eye movement sleep, we are going through things that happen during the day and we're processing them and we're making sense and turning them into neurochemical information, so to speak. And then we're filing it away into our brain so that it should go in slowly into the past, you know. But when we have really bad situations, and sometimes they're like big T, like an assault or a mugging or a bad accident or deaths or rapes, childhood sexual abuse, things like that, then everybody knows that that's a traumatic experience. But we also have what they call little T traumas, which are those things like every day my father would sit at the dinner table and complain about how I ate and how I said things and how I spoke and what happened at school and always criticizing me. And those things sometimes can even be more difficult to get over and can be considered traumatic than the other things, because these start getting ingrained into your personality. So what EMDR does, and it stands for eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. It's not the best name in the world, and Francine kind of regrets not having found a better name for it. But what we basically do is we ask the person to think about a certain situation, a certain memory, which is the way we find it in our brain. And then we apply the phases of the protocol. It's very scientific. It's even recognized by the World Health Organization, by the National Registry of Evidence-Based Psychotherapy and Practice as well in the United States. So it has a lot of scientific evidence for what's being done. We ask the person to think about those things, and then we ask them to move their eyes from one side to the other. Or else we can do this with auditory bilateral stimulation, they call it, you know, with hearing, with music, if it goes from one side to the other. Or we can even do it, you know, in our person's hands or their legs. And we even have a hug that we can also use as a form of bilateral stimulation, they call it, you know, bilateral tapping. And in a certain sense, this imitates what happens to us when we sleep. And it makes the brain go past that area of the memory where it's stuck. And so in a certain sense, it gets it unstuck and we can move. And since the brain is so fast, the processing also is very, very fast. So we have eight phases and several of them are specifically reprocessing. And this begins to help the brain heal itself. And it begins to do what God created it to do. And so we can get over the suffering that is tied to that memory by the reprocessing. And what's amazing is that as we get rid of the bad parts of the memory and how much it hurt, how much it physically hurt or emotionally hurt or, you know, mentally hurt, then the good things begin to come up. We also see that the positive thoughts that we had never realized were there can come up. Oh, it really wasn't my fault. I was just a child, you know? And so this spontaneously comes up and we are able to find the truth, you know, the good things that happen to us as a result of having been able to unload or get rid of, you know, that dirty glass of all those bad memories. Well, now it's empty and we can fill it with clean water, with clean, good, positive thinking. And this changes our behavior, it changes our thoughts, it changes my ability, and it gives me, which I think is one of the greatest gifts that God gave us, even in the garden, the ability to choose. Because trauma takes away our ability to choose. We are not able to choose in a certain sense. When we have traumatized memories, we are not able to choose to do differently. You think of addictions or think of certain habit patterns. That we develop as children, as we grow up, as a result of certain experiences, we are not able to choose to do differently. And so what EMDR does when we are processing these things, it restores and gives us the ability to choose. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to behave this way anymore. And I can change. And that's when I say it's Christian user friendly. That is one of the aspects of why I believe it's so biblical in that sense, is that it restores to us one of the greatest gifts that God gave us. Because he said, you know, here's a tree in the garden. If you eat it, you have these consequences. If you don't eat it, you have those consequences. Now decide what you're going to do. Yeah. So the Lord is always in that business of giving us choices and seeing how we behave. And the enemy is always in the business of imposing evil or, you know, unhealthy or maladaptive, dysfunctional patterns in our lives as much as he is able to. So I don't know if that helps make it more sense. No,
absolutely. I have some friends that say they would not be where they are in their healing journey without having had EMDR. And I was just wondering, like, for you, when people come to you with trauma, I think you said the other day EMDR is one of the main tools that you use. And so who really is a good candidate for it? Like, who would you say that might be listening is someone that it would be helpful for?
I think just about everybody. can benefit from it in some way or another. Honestly, I really do. It depends much more on the therapist's expertise and knowledge and how to use it than really on the form of therapy itself. My first training was in psychodrama. I still think in role therapy and the different roles that live inside of us. And, you know, we have a child role, we have an adult role, we have, you know, one of those adolescents who are always in crises, we have a scaredy cat inside. And so I think that way, and I think of how psychodrama can also help us, even in our thoughts, do things differently. Now I would like for you to go back into that memory and redo it in a different way, how you would have liked to have handled the situation in a more functional way. And the brain believes it. You know, this is the amazing thing about what the brain has to offer us in that sense of how God made it. You think it through, and as we reprocess those things, the brain really does believe those experiences. And so we can change it. So I think like a psychodramatist, but the tool that I have to really be able to bring these kinds of results is the tool of this approach of EMDR therapy, because it's what makes changes in people's behavior possible in their brains. You know, the person is always conscious, they're always aware, they can choose to continue, they can choose to stop. It's not like any kind of hypnotic state or something, you know, the way they used to talk about hypnosis, not like it is nowadays, but it's a very different brainwave, in fact. People are always in charge of their process. But basically, it's what gives us that ability to be able to change. And it's like, I was sharing with you earlier, you know, it's like we have that memory, and when we pull it up, we have a window of opportunity to be able to re-edit what happened to us.
Yeah, I think you described it when you were telling me, like it's like pulling up a file on a computer, yes. And you have sort of a certain length of time that you can make edits to it.
Exactly. So let's say that I'm writing an article and I'm halfway through it or something. And so I can pull it up on my computer, and in my brain, I have about 4 or 5 hours where I can make these edits. And on the computer, you know, I make all the changes and I cut some things out and I add another 2 or 3 paragraphs and I rearrange some things and then I save it. When I save it, I do not save the original copy. It doesn't save the original copy. And the brain does not save the original copy of what happened to me either. It does save the reprocessed facts, and I can see it much more in a functional and adult manner, because many times, even though I'm 38 or something, you know, I'm seeing that experience through the eyes of an 8-year-old, or I'm behaving like an 8-year-old because that's my response, because I got stuck back there in that phase of my development, because trauma does stunt our development, our psycho-emotional development, our psychosexual development. Trauma will stop that. It will just, you know, really arrest that development. So EMDR will free that role to be able to continue to develop into adulthood. And when I go back and I look at my article that I edited, or my memory that I've edited, I see what happened, but it has lost its ability to hurt me. It has lost its ability to make me suffer. And that's why I call it the Manasseh anointing. Mm. The Manasseh anointing, because Manasseh, you know, when Joseph said that he had called his son that, named his son that, it has made me forget my suffering. Mm. You know, when this child was born, he made me forget my suffering. And that's why I called him Manasseh. And so I think EMDR in that sense, you know, I can still remember, I can still see the you know, the memory as such. But it doesn't hurt anymore. It doesn't hurt the way it used to. And it doesn't trigger behavior that I really don't want to have. I really don't want to develop in things. So in that sense, too, I consider it Christian user-friendly, because it really does take away the suffering, even though I can remember it and I'm in charge all the time of what's happening. Yeah.
That's so good. Can you tell us a little more about psychodrama in case people are not familiar with that term as well?
Mm-hmm. Well, psychodrama is a very, very old form of psychotherapy. It's at least 100 years old since Jacob Moreno. He was born in Europe and then immigrated to the United States just before Second World War began. He was very involved in Vienna during the First World War, and he developed sociometry, which is also a way of mapping out relationships. Now, the psychodrama side of that is that we can also relive our experiences instead of just talking about it. So he was always saying, well, instead of telling me about it, show me. Choose somebody in this group to be your husband. Choose somebody to be you. Choose somebody to be your mother-in-law, you know? And what was the argument line? And then he would choose people in the audience, or the person would choose people in the audience or in the group therapy, on the therapy group, to represent these roles. And then he would do something that I think was so amazing, which is role reversal. Now I want you to be your husband, and I'm going to ask you some questions, and I'm going to talk to you as if you were your husband. And so I would have to get, you know, the person would have to get into the husband's role and feel and think and see things from his perspective. Now, this is such an amazing way of working, because we really do perceive things in a different way when we are allowed or made to go into somebody else's role. Nowadays, I would explain this as being able to access neural networks in our brain that have this information, and that I would not be able to understand it if I was not in another person's role. And usually what happens is that we begin to understand much better why the person did what they did, why they spoke as they spoke, why they reacted or responded in the way they did. It gives us much, much more mercy and compassion and understanding. Sometimes mm-hmm. it'll even give us solutions. You know, when you roll reverse back into your, like, let's say it's a mother and her adolescent son says, well, now that you've been acting like John for a few minutes, now, when you're back in your own role, mom, what do you think? Do you think this way of talking to him really works? Is, no, I can see this isn't going to work. This isn't the way. I'm just so amazed at how I see myself talking to him. It's not going to do it. Well, let's find another way of talking to him that might be more palatable, that might make it work better in the relationship. So to me, role reversal is the golden gem of all psychotherapy, to be honest with you, because when we can put ourselves into somebody else's shoes, we can really feel and perceive what they feel. And then we can change our behavior accordingly. So when you put that together with EMDR, then the change really amplifies in an amazing way. And we have behavior drama, where we can also take on these roles in the Bible. And that's a whole different approach, which is not just theater. It's not just like, okay, well, now we're going to act out the story of the prodigal son. No, we can choose in the story how many people in this audience want to be, pretend they are the younger son. How many want to be the older son? How many want to be the father? We can change the story. We can have, okay, let's pretend that it's going to be dinner time, and the younger son is going to ask his father for his inheritance so he can leave. Who's at this table? Well, the butler might be there, the nanny who helped raise the boys. Mama may be there. We don't know. Mother never showed up in the story, but who's to say she's not there, you know? Or older sisters, or the cousin who happened to drop in for dinner. And then we can talk to these people. We can ask them, interview them. Says, wow, you're the nanny. This is, what did you think of this conversation? Oh, he's like that. He always wanted to have his way. Ever since his mother passed away, he's always gotten his way and blah, blah. And so all of a sudden, the Bible begins to change, because in a good way, we can perceive what's in the white letters. You know, Peter Pizzoli, who developed this to an art form, pulled in aspects of the Jewish form of reading the Bible. And he talks about the black fire and the white fire. So the black fire is are the letters. These are immutable. We have to respect what is written. What is written, and that's that. But we can also, but we can project what is in the white spaces. And so we can have a conversation between the older son and the younger son, where the father says, okay, he's come home. He's going to live on, under this roof, and the two of you are going to have to get along. And he's, you know, he's tired of having the two of you at each other's throats. So you're going to have this conversation and work it out. And so then we can see not only what comes out of the story, but what is my own perspective, my own my own links. What are my own links to this story and what this has mm-hmm. to do?
Sounds like it really helps people connect.
That's an amazing way of reading the Bible.
Yeah. So, and what has been, I mean, I'm assuming you've had a lot of people have very good results with both EMDR, psychodrama, and the different things that you do. Are there any, you know, example or stories that you can tell us? I know you can't tell us any details of anybody, but just the fact that you've had good results, people love it and probably come back for more, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have some books written on this. One of them is called Heal Your Brain, Heal Your Body. And I do have stories in there from my clients who have given me authorization to be able to tell them. I think the story that comes to mind oftentimes in this situation is a friend of mine who, whenever she would sit under a bright light, she would get these terrible migraines. And she had done all of the tests and all the exams and tried all the medications, everything, nothing. They could not find the cause and they could not find a solution. But every time she sat under a bright light, she would have a migraine. And it was so bad that her kids would say, "Hey, Mommy, don't sit under that light here in the restaurant because you're going to get a headache." Well, one day she went to an EMDR session. It wasn't with me. It was somebody else to work on some surgery. Surgery is always traumatic, in my opinion. God created skin so that stuff on the inside stays on the inside. Stuff on the outside stays on the outside, and never the two shall meet. Now, do we have to do surgery sometimes? Yes, we do. Does the body like it? No, it does not like it. It does not appreciate getting cut open. Well, she went to do some EMDR on this memory of a recent surgery. And the brain slid back, and it does this a lot. It'll just like all these memories get filed together like little knots on the same thread. So she pulled up this thread in her brain and just pulled it up to a memory that she had of having had surgery 15 or 20 years beforehand. And she had almost died in this surgery. It was a very serious recovery. It was one of those, you know, belly open things. And while she was reprocessing this memory, she remembered that she had woken up in the middle of surgery. Now, when she woke up, and this happens more often than people imagine, when she woke up in the middle of surgery, she says, "You know, I didn't have pain where they were working on me in my stomach and stuff like that, but my eyes opened and that bright, bright light of the surgical center gave me a horrible headache. It gave me such nausea from the anesthesia, of course. And I can still remember, and I can still tell you where all of the doctors were standing and the nurses and how they were dressed and how they..." And of course, they just kind of nudged each other, or the anesthesiologist put her back to sleep. And nobody was going to remind her about this. "Oh, yes, by the way, you woke up in the middle of surgery." And her recovery was so touch and go for a while that she really couldn't even concentrate on something like this. Well, she reprocessed that memory within an hour, you know, and she's never had a migraine again. Every once in a while, I ask her about, this has been 8 or 9 years. Just, "I've never had a headache. I've never taken a Tylenol again in my life." Wow. So then we begin to see how much traumatic experiences may be tied to our physical manifestations of illnesses and disease and pain.
Yes, exactly.
It's pretty amazing.
Well, that's so good. And could you tell us just briefly before we wrap up about brain spotting? I've read a little bit about that as well. And I know that you also do training and things like that in with mm-hmm. that.
Well, brain spotting starts coming out of EMDR, you know, where EMDR has us move our eyes back and forth. The developer of EMDR is a colleague named David Grand, a wonderful man, wonderful therapist. And he noticed one day when he was doing EMDR with a client that their eyes kind of froze at a certain spot. And so instead of insisting that they move it back and forth, he held, like that moment it was his finger, and then later on he uses a pointer or a pencil or something. He held the eye at that spot. And all of a sudden, other kinds of memories started coming out from that spot that she was looking at. And so he developed the saying that where we look at affects how I feel. And so it's amazing. You know how sometimes you'll be looking at that 10,000 mile stare, you're looking far away. We do that spontaneously. And so in a certain sense, he harnessed that into certain exercises that we can do by keeping our eyes still, but that will help us process memories in a different quality than EMDR does. Also very intense, very effective. It does not have the kind of research to back it up that EMDR does have, nor does it have the protocols structured in the same way. And some therapists like it more because it's more intuitive. Other ones like the other one better because it's more structured. Some clients respond better to one. Other clients respond better to the other format. But they're both reprocessing forms of doing our memories, making our memories stop hurting and things like that. So it's pretty amazing. And he also has used it a lot to develop, you know, help people do better with what they already do well. For example, Olympic athletes or actors and actresses who need to develop their roles better, or musicians, baseball players, golfers, so that they can do even better at the sport, you know, improve their expertise at the sport that they are involved in, or their professions as well.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Interesting. Very fascinating. The whole thing, EMDR and brain spotting, makes me think of the scripture where Jesus is talking about, you know, if your eye is healthy, then your whole body is healthy. Yeah, so fascinating. The eye is a window to the soul. But so anyway, okay, well, thank you so much, Lynn. I'm going to put up a couple of your website and your resources. So your website is traumaclinicinternational.com. And so people can find you there. And by the way, we will have all of this also in the notes for the podcast. So if people want to look it up, it's definedbygod.com/episode26. They can go there and they'll see all the notes, all the links that we mention. And then you have a book. Is it a book or a resource, Breaking Free?
It's kind of like a manual. It's a practical manual. It was developed for women who were coming out of domestic violence. This was about 30 years ago. We tested it for 2 or 3 years in a women's shelter in Ecuador. And this was before EMDR, but they are practical exercises in group that a facilitator can use to help women. It was specifically developed for women come out and recover from these situations of domestic violence. We had the interesting experience that many of the men started seeking out help and also wanted to recover their marriages. Not all of them, but there was a minority that said, no, I don't want to lose my family. I don't want to lose my wife. What do I need to do to be able to change my behavior? So that was a very interesting thing. And others got their first job as a result of going through the program. They didn't think they could support themselves and their children and be able to leave the violent situation, and many of them did. So that's how the book developed. It's just a small booklet. It is free on Kindle, on Amazon.com. It's not free in all the other Amazons because I haven't been able to get it done that way. They haven't given it to me, that possibility. But in the English format, it is. I do have it in Spanish and Portuguese. Most of my work has been done in Portuguese and a lot in Spanish as well. And now more and more we're having resources in English, but I have many of my books in English, and this is one of them. And it is free on Kindle if you order it on Amazon.com. I want it as a resource for people who need it most.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And then you have a course that's on your website. So it's an online course. Tell us about this.
It's a hybrid course. Part of it is done online. A person does the first 5 modules. These are for mental health therapists, although we have a pastoral version, which will soon be available as well, which will be for lay counselors and paraprofessionals. This particular one, the PIPO, it stands in Portuguese, it means, you know, to fly a kite. It stands for the Professional Intervention Program for Adversities. So it's to help people face their issues. And these are three group exercises that we teach that incorporate much of what we have learned about desensitization and reprocessing that we can scale and multiply. So, for example, if you get the booklet on breaking free, for women in recovery or for grief recovery or divorce recovery, and you apply the exercises you learn in the PIPA program, people will recover probably much more quickly because of the reprocessing element that these exercises bring into it. So they have to do the first five modules on their own. And then we have a practical one-day training session where I teach the exercises themselves. We do a lot of introduction into trauma. And then a month or two later, we do some consultation on how they are doing with their groups and how they're implementing what they've learned.
That's wonderful. That's so good to have that resource available for people. So that is for, I think you said, like licensed therapists and that kind of thing.
Yeah, this one is for licensed mental health workers, but we are developing another one for paraprofessionals and another one, which is a pastoral version. And it won't be necessarily for licensed people. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Well, thank you so much. And any last words to our listeners and viewers today?
The thing that the Lord has spoken to me in the last 25, 30 years is that without healing, there is no holiness. Mm-hmm. And this is especially beautiful when you see it in writing in Spanish or Portuguese. Sin sanidad, no hay santidad, because they rhyme. And the only difference between the two words is the T, which is the cross of Christ. And so I think here I would just like to encourage everyone to seek healing. We need to have emotional healing for our souls so that we are able to choose more and choose better and choose make better choices to follow the will of God. So many times we want to please the Lord. We want to do what is right. We want to be able to do those things and are not able to. Healing, this emotional healing aspect, will allow us to be more faithful and more obedient and follow the Lord in a better way.
Yeah, that's so good. Thank you. Thanks for coming on and sharing your wisdom and expertise with us. I really appreciate it. And thanks to all of our listeners and viewers for joining us today. And be sure to go to the website for all of the links to everything that we talked about today, which is definedbygod.com, episode 26. And until next time, you have a wonderful day. Thank you so much for joining us for the Defined by God podcast. If you'd like more information, please visit our website at definedbygod.com and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and email list.